That was a phrase she'd heard before, but not one she'd ever learned to love. Kathy went back to her morning paper while her husband graduated to the early bird. The Beijing story, Jack saw, had happened too late for the morning editions. One more thing to chuff up the TV newsies and annoy the print ones. Somehow, the debate over the federal education budget didn't seem all that important this morning. But he'd learned to scan the editorials, because they tended to reflect the questions the reporters would ask at the press conference, and that was one way for him to defend himself. By 7:45, the kids were about ready for their drive to school, and Kathy was ready for her flight to Hopkins. Kyle Daniel went with her, with his own Secret Service detail, composed exclusively of women who would look after him at the Hopkins Daycare Center, rather like a pack of she-wolves. Katie would head back to her daycare center, the rebuilt Giant Steps north of Annapolis. There were fewer kids there now, but a larger protective detail. The big kids went to St. Mary's. On cue, the Marine VH-60 Black Hawk helicopter eased down on the South Lawn helipad. The day was about to start for real. The entire Ryan family took the elevator downstairs. First Mom and Dad walked the kids to the west entrance of the West Wing, where, after hugs and kisses, three of the kids got into their cars to drive off. Then Jack walked Kathy to the helicopter for the kiss goodbye. And the big Sikorsky lifted off under the control of Colonel Dan Malloy for the hop to Johns Hopkins. With that done, Ryan walked back to the West Wing and inside to the Oval Office. Ben Goodley was waiting for him. "How bad?" Jack asked his national security adviser. "Bad," Goodley replied at once. "What was it all about?" "They were trying to stop an abortion. The Chinese do them late term if the pregnancy is not government approved. They wait until just before the baby pops out and zap it in the top of the head with a needle before it gets to take a breath. Evidently, the woman on the tape was having an unauthorized baby, and her minister, that's the Chinese guy who gets it in the head, a Baptist preacher educated evidently at Oral Roberts University in Oklahoma, would you believe? Anyway, he came to the hospital to help. The papal nuncio, Renato Cardinal de Milo, evidently knew the Baptist preacher pretty well and came to offer assistance. It's hard to tell exactly what went wrong, but it blew up real bad, as the tape shows." "Any statements?" "The Vatican deplores the incident and has requested an explanation, but it gets worse. Cardinal de Milo is from the de Milo family. He has a brother, Vincenzo de Milo, who's in the Italian Parliament. He was a cabinet minister a while back. And so the Italian government has issued its own protest. Ditto the German government, because the cardinal's aide is a German monsignor named Schepke, who's a Jesuit, and he got a little roughed up, and the Germans aren't very happy either. This Monsignor Schepke was arrested briefly, but he was released after a few hours when the Chinese remembered he had diplomatic status. The thinking at state is that the PRC might PNG the guy, just to get him the hell out of the country and make the whole thing all go away." "What time is it in Beijing?" "Us minus 11, so it's 9 at night there," Card Sharp answered. "The trade delegation will need instructions of some sort about this. I need to talk to Scott Adler as soon as he gets in this morning."
"You need more than that, Jack."
It was the voice of Arnold Van Damme at the door to the office.
"What else?"
"The Chinese Baptist who got killed. I just heard he has friends over here."
"Oral Roberts University," Ryan said. "Ben told me."
"The churchgoers are not going to like this one, Jack," Arnie warned.
"Hey, guy, I don't goddamn like it," the president pointed out.
"Hell, I don't like abortion under the best of circumstances, remember?"
"I remember," Van Damme said. recalling all the trouble Ryan had gotten into with his first presidential statement on the issue. And this kind of abortion is especially barbaric. And so two guys go to the fucking hospital and try to save the baby's life, and they get killed for it. Jesus, Ryan concluded. And we have to do business with people like this. Then another face showed up at the door. You've heard, I suppose, Robbie Jackson observed. Oh, yeah. Hell of a thing to see over breakfast. My pap knows the guy. What? Ryan asked. Remember at the reception last week? He told you about it. Pap and Jerry Patterson both support his congregation out of Mississippi. Some other congregations, too. It's a Baptist thing, Jack. Well-off churches look after ones that need help. And this you guy sure as hell needed help, looks like. I haven't talked to him yet, but Pap is going to raise pure fucking hell about this one, and you can bet on it, the vice president informed his boss. Who's Patterson? Van Dam asked. White preacher, got a big air-conditioned church in the suburbs of Jackson. Pretty good guy, actually. He and Pap have known each other forever. Patterson went through school with this you guy, I think. This is going to get ugly, the chief of staff observed. Arnie, baby, it's already ugly, Jackson pointed out. The CNN cameraman had been a little too good, or had just been standing in a good place, and had caught both shots in all their graphic majesty. What's your dad going to say? Ryan asked. Tomcat made them wait for it. He's going to call down the wrath of Almighty God on those murdering cocksuckers. He's going to call Reverend Yu a martyr to the Christian faith, right up there with the Maccabees of the Old Testament, and those courageous bastards the Romans fed to the lions. Arnie, have you ever seen a Baptist preacher calling down the vengeance of the Lord? It beats the hell out of the Super Bowl, boy, Robbie promised. Reverend Yu is standing upright and proud before the Lord Jesus right now, and the guys who killed him have their rooms reserved in the everlasting fires of hell. Wait till you hear him go at it. It's impressive, guys. I've seen him do it. And Jerry Patterson won't be far behind. And the hell of it is, I can't disagree with any of it. Jesus, Ryan breathed, those two men died to save the life of a baby. If you gotta die, that's not a bad reason for it. They both died like men, Mr. C., Chavez was saying in Moscow. I wish I was there with a gun. It had hit Ding especially hard. Fatherhood had changed his perspective on a lot of things, and this was just one of them. The life of a child was sacrosanct, and a threat against a child was an invitation to immediate death in his ethical universe. And in the real universe, he was known to have a gun a lot of the time, and the training to use it efficiently. Different people have different ways of looking at things, Clark told his subordinate. But if he'd been there, he would have disarmed both of the Chinese cops. On the videotape, they hadn't looked all that formidable. And you didn't kill people to make a fashion statement. Domingo still had the Latin temperament, John reminded himself. And that wasn't so bad a thing, was it? What are you saying, John? Ding asked in surprise. I'm saying two good men died yesterday, and I imagine God will look after both of them. Ever been to China? He shook his head. Taiwan once, for R&R a long time ago. That was okay, but aside from that, no closer than North Vietnam. I don't speak the language, and I can't blend in. Both factors were distantly frightening to Clark. The ability to disappear into the surroundings was the sine qua non of being a field intelligence officer. They were in a hotel bar in Moscow after their first day of lecturing their Russian students. The beer on tap was acceptable. Neither of them was in a mood for vodka. Life in Britain had spoiled them. This bar, which catered to Americans, had CNN on a large screen TV next to the bar, and this was CNN's lead story around the globe. The American government, the report concluded, hadn't reacted to the incident yet.
So what's Jack going to do? Chavez wondered.
I don't know. We have that negotiations team in Beijing right now for trade talks, Clark reminded him.
The diplomatic chatter might get a little sharp, Domingo thought.
Scott, we can't let this one slide, Jack said. A call from the White House had brought Adler's official car here instead of Foggy Bottom.
It is not, strictly speaking, pertinent to trade talks, the Secretary of State pointed out.
Maybe you want to do business with people like that, Vice President Jackson responded, but the people outside the Beltway might not.
We have to consider public opinion on this, Scott, Ryan said.
And you know we have to damn well consider my opinion. The murder of a diplomat is not something we can ignore. Italy is a NATO member, so is Germany. And we have diplomatic relations with the Vatican and about 70 million Catholics in the country, plus millions more Baptists.
Okay, Jack, Eagle said with raised defensive hands. I am not defending them, okay? I'm talking about the foreign policy of the United States of America here, and we're not supposed to manage that on the basis of emotions. The people out there pay us to use our heads, not our dicks.
Ryan let out a long breath. Okay, maybe I had that coming. Go on.
We issue a statement deploring this sorry incident in strong language. We have Ambassador Hitch make a call on their foreign ministry and say the same thing. Maybe even stronger, but in more informal language. We give them a chance to think this mess through before they become an international pariah. Maybe discipline those trigger-happy cops. Hell, maybe shoot them, given how the law works over there. We let common sense break out, okay?
And what do I say?
Adler thought that one over for a few seconds.
Say whatever you want. We can always explain to them that we have a lot of churchgoers here and you have to assuage their sensibilities, that they have inflamed American public opinion, and in our country, public opinion counts for something. They know that on an intellectual level, but deep down in the gut, they don't get it.
That's okay, Sextate went on. Just so they get it in the brain, because the brain talks to the gut occasionally. They have to understand that the world doesn't like this sort of thing.
And if they don't? The Vice President asked.
Well, then we have a trade delegation to show them the consequences of uncivilized behavior.
Adler looked around the room.
Are we okay on that?
Ryan looked down at the coffee table.
There were times when he wished he were a truck driver, able to scream out bloody murder when certain things happened. But that was just one more freedom the President of the United States didn't have.
Okay, Jack, you have to be sensible and rational about all this.
He looked up.
Yes, Scott, we're sort of okay on that.
Anything from our, new source on this issue?
Ryan shook his head.
No, MP hasn't sent anything over yet.
If she does,
you'll get a copy real fast, the President promised.
Get me some talking points.
I'll have to make a statement.
When, Arnie?
11-ish ought to be okay, Van Damme decided. I'll talk to some media guys about this.
Okay, if anybody has ideas later today, I want to hear them, Ryan said, standing and adjourning the meeting.
Chapter 26 Glass Houses and Rocks. Bangan had worked late that day because of the incident that had Washington working early. As a result, Ming hadn't transcribed his discussion notes and her computer hadn't gotten them out on the net as early as usual. But Mary Pat got her email about 9:45. This she read over, copied to her husband Ed, and then shot via secure fax line to the White House, where Ben Goodley walked it to the Oval Office. The cover letter didn't contain Mary Pat's initial comment on reading the transmission.
Oh, shit.
Those cocksuckers,
Ryan snarled, to the surprise of Andrea Price, who happened to be in the room just then.
"Anything I need to know about, sir?" she asked. His voice had been so furious.
"No, Andrea, just that thing on CNN this morning."
Ryan paused, blushing that she'd heard his temper let go again. And in that way.
"By the way, how's your husband doing?"
"Well, he bagged those three bank robbers up in Philadelphia, and they did it without firing a shot. I was a little worried about that."
Ryan allowed himself a smile.
"That's one guy I wouldn't want to have a shootout with.
Tell me, you saw CNN this morning, right?"
"Yes, sir, and we replayed it at the command post."
"Opinion?"
"If I'd have been there, my weapon would have come out. That was cold-blooded murder. Looks bad on TV when you do dumb stuff like that, sir."
"Sure as hell does," the president agreed.
He nearly asked her opinion on what he ought to do about it. Ryan respected Mrs. O'Day's, she still went by Price on the job, judgment. But it wouldn't have been fair to ask her to delve into foreign affairs. And besides, he already had his mind pretty well made up. But then he speed-dialed Adler's direct line on his phone.
"Yes, Jack?" Only one person had that direct line.
"What do you make of the Zorga stuff?"
"It's not surprising, unfortunately. You have to expect them to circle wagons."
"What do we do about it?" Swordsman demanded.
"We say what we think, but we try not to make it worse than it already is," Sexstate replied, cautious as ever.
"Right," Ryan growled, even though it was exactly the good advice he'd expected from his Sexstate. Then he hung up. He reminded himself that Arnie had told him a long time ago that a president wasn't allowed to have a temper. But that was asking a hell of a lot. And at what point was he allowed to react the way a man needed to react? When was he supposed to stop acting like a goddamned robot?
"You want Callie to work up something for you in a hurry?" Arnie asked over the phone.
"No," Ryan replied, with a shake of the head. "I'll just wing it."
"Well, that's a mistake," the chief of staff warned.
"Arnie, just let me be me once in a while, okay?"
"Okay, Jack," Van Damme replied. And it was just as well the president didn't see his expression.
"Don't make things worse than they already are," Ryan told himself at his desk.
"Yeah, sure, like that's possible."
"Hi, Pap," Robbie Jackson was saying in his office at the northwest corner of the West Wing.
"Robert, have you seen..."
"Yes, we've all seen it," the vice president assured his father.
"And what are you all going to do about it?"
"Pap, we haven't figured that out yet. Remember that we have to do business with these people. The jobs of a lot of Americans depend on trade with China and..."
"Robert."
The Reverend Josiah Jackson used Robbie's proper name mainly when he was feeling rather stern.
"Those people murdered a man of God. No, excuse me, they murdered two men of God doing their duty, trying to save the life of an innocent child, and one does not do business with murderers."
"I know that, and I don't like it any more than you do, and trust me, Jack Ryan doesn't like it any more than you do either. But when we make foreign policy for our country, we have to think things through, because if we screw it up, people can lose their lives."
"Lives have already been lost, Robert," Reverend Jackson pointed out.
"I know that. Look, Pap, I know more about this than you do, okay? I mean, we have ways of finding out stuff that doesn't make it on CNN," the vice president told his father, with the latest Zorga report right in his hand. Part of him wished that he could show it to his father, because his father was easily smart enough to grasp the importance of the secret things that he and Ryan knew. But there was no way he could even approach discussing that sort of thing with anyone without a TS-SAR clearance. And that included his wife, just as it included Kathy Ryan.
Jackson thought. Maybe that was something he should discuss with Jack. You had to be able to talk this stuff over with someone you trusted,
just as a reality check on what was right and wrong. Their wives weren't security risks, were they?
Like what? His father asked, only halfway expecting an answer.
Like I can't discuss some things with you, Pap, and you know that. I'm sorry, the rules apply to me just like they do to everybody else.
So, what are we going to do about this?
We're going to let the Chinese know that we are pretty damned angry, and we expect them to clean their act up and apologize, and...
Apologize? Reverend Jackson shot back. Robert, they murdered two people.
I know that, Pap, but we can't send the FBI over to arrest their government for this, can we? We are very powerful here, but we are not God, and as much as I'd like to hurl a thunderbolt at them, I can't.
So we are going to do what?
We haven't decided yet. I'll let you know when we figure it out, Tomcat promised his father.
Do that, Hosiah said, hanging up far more abruptly than usual.
Christ, Pap, Robbie breathed into the phone.
Then he wondered how representative of the religious community his father was. The hardest thing to figure was public reaction. People reacted on a sub-intellectual level to what they saw on TV. If you showed some chief of state tossing a puppy dog out the window of his car, the ASPCA might demand a break in diplomatic relations, and enough people might agree to send a million telegrams or emails to the White House. Jackson remembered a case in California where the killing of a dog had caused more public outrage than the kidnap murder of a little girl. But at least the bastard who'd killed the girl had been caught, tried, and sentenced to death, whereas the asshole who'd tossed the little dog into traffic had never been identified, despite the ton of reward money that had been raised. Well, it had all happened in the San Francisco area. Maybe that explained it. America wasn't supposed to make policy on the basis of emotion. But America was a democracy, and therefore her elected officials had to pay attention to what the people thought. And it wasn't easy, especially for rational folk, to predict the emotions of the public at large. Could the television image they'd just seen theoretically upset international trade? Without a doubt. And that was a very big deal. Jackson got up from his desk and walked to Arnie's office.
Got a question, he said, going in.
Shoot, the president's chief of staff replied.
How's the public going to react to this mess in Beijing?
Not sure yet, Van Damme answered.
How do we find out?
Usually, you just wait and see. I'm not into this focus group stuff. I prefer to gauge public opinion the regular way. Newspaper editorials, letters to the editor, and the mail we get here.
You're worried about this?
Yep, Robbie nodded.
Yeah, so am I. The right-to-lifers are going to be on this like a lion on a crippled gazelle, and so are the people who don't like the PRC. Lots of them in Congress. If the Chinese think they're going to get MFN this year, they're on drugs. It's a public relations nightmare for the PRC, but I don't think they're capable of understanding what they started. And I don't see them apologizing to anybody.
Yeah, well, my father just tore me a new asshole over this one, Vice President Jackson said. If the rest of the clergy picks this one up, there's going to be a firestorm. The Chinese have to apologize loud and fast if they want to cut their losses.
Van Damme nodded agreement.
Yeah, but they won't. They're too damn proud.
Pride goeth before the fall, Tomcat observed.
Only after you feel the pain from the broken ass bone, Admiral, Van Damme corrected the Vice President.
Ryan entered the White House press room feeling tense. The usual cameras were there. CNN and Fox would probably be running this news conference live, and maybe C-SPAN as well. The other networks would just tape it, probably, for use in their news feeds to the local stations and their own flagship evening news shows. He came to the lectern and took a sip of water before staring into the faces of the assembled 30 or so spectators.
"Good morning," Jack began, grasping the lectern tightly,
as he tended to do when angry. He didn't know that reporters knew about it, too, and could see it from where they sat.
We all saw those horrible pictures on the television this morning. The deaths of Renato Cardinal de Milo, the papal nuncio to the People's Republic of China, and the Reverend Yufa An, who we believe was a native of the Republic of China and educated at Oral Roberts University in Oklahoma. First of all, the United States of America extends our condolences to the families of both men. Second, we call upon the government of the People's Republic to launch an immediate and full investigation of this horrible tragedy, to determine who, if anyone, was at fault, and if someone was at fault, for such person or persons to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. The death of a diplomat at the hands of an agent of a government is a gross violation of international treaty and convention. It is a quintessentially uncivilized act that must be set right as quickly and definitively as possible. Peaceful relations between nations cannot exist without diplomacy, and diplomacy cannot be carried out except through men and women whose personal safety is sacrosanct. That has been the case for literally thousands of years. Even in time of war, the lives of diplomats have always been protected by all sides for this very reason. We require that the government of the PRC explain this tragic event and take proper action to see to it that nothing of this sort will ever happen again. That concludes my statement. Questions? Ryan looked up, trying not to brace too obviously for the storm that was about to break. Mr. President, the Associated Press said, the two clergymen who died were there to prevent an abortion. Does that affect your reaction to this incident? Ryan allowed himself to show surprise at the stupid question. My views on abortion are on public record, but I think everyone, even the pro-choice community, would respond negatively to what happened here. The woman in question did not choose to have an abortion, but the Chinese government tried to impose its will on her by killing a full-term fetus about to be born. If anyone did that in the United States, that person would be guilty of a felony. Probably more than one. Yet that is government policy in the People's Republic. As you know, I personally object to abortion on moral grounds. But what we saw attempted on TV this morning is worse even than that. It's an act of incomprehensible barbarism. Those two courageous men tried to stop it, and they were killed for their efforts. But thank God the baby appears to have survived. Next question. Ryan pointed next to a known troublemaker. Mr. President, the Boston Globe said, the government's action grew out of the People's Republic's population control policy. Is it our place to criticize a country's internal policy? Christ, Ryan thought, another one? You know, once upon a time, a fellow named Hitler tried to manage the population of his country, in fact, of a lot of Europe, by killing the mentally infirm, the socially undesirable, and those whose religions he didn't like. Now, yes, Germany was a nation-state, and we even had diplomatic relations with Hitler until December 1941. But are you saying that America does not have the right to object to a policy we consider barbaric just because it is the official policy of a nation-state? Hermann Göring tried that defense at the Nuremberg trials. Do you want the United States of America to recognize it? Jack demanded. The reporter wasn't as used to answering questions as to asking them. Then she saw that the cameras were pointed her way, and she was having a bad hair day. Her response, therefore, could have been a little better. Mr. President, is it possible that your views of abortion have affected your reaction to this event? No, ma'am. I've disapproved of murder even longer than I've objected to abortion, Ryan replied coldly. But you've just compared the People's Republic of China to Hitler's Germany, the Globe reporter pointed out. You can't say that about them. Both countries shared a view of population control that is antithetical to American traditions. Or do you approve of imposing late-term abortions on women who choose not to have one? Sir, I'm not the president, the Globe replied as she sat down, avoiding the question, but not the embarrassed blush. Mr. President,
began the San Francisco Examiner. Whether we like it or not, China has decided for itself what sort of laws it wants to have, and the two men who died this morning were interfering with those laws, weren't they? The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King interfered with the laws of Mississippi and Alabama back when I was in high school. Did the Examiner object to his actions then?
Well, no, but we regard the personal human conscience as a sovereign force, don't we?
Jack shot back. The principle goes back to St. Augustine, when he said that an unjust law is no law. Now, you guys in the media agree with that principle. Is it only when you happen to agree with the person operating on that principle? Isn't that intellectually dishonest? I do not personally approve of abortion. You all know that. I've taken a considerable amount of heat for that personal belief, some of which has been laid on me by you good people. Fine. The Constitution allows us all to feel the way we choose. But the Constitution does not allow me not to enforce the law against people who blow up abortion clinics. I can sympathize with their overall point of view, but I cannot agree or sympathize with the use of violence to pursue a political position. We call that terrorism, and it's against the law. And I have sworn an oath to enforce the law fully and fairly in all cases, regardless of how I may or may not feel on a particular issue. Therefore, if you do not apply it even-handedly, ladies and gentlemen, it is not a principle at all, but ideology, and it is not very helpful to the way we govern our lives and our country. Now, on the broader question, you said that China has chosen its laws. Has it? Has it really? The People's Republic is not, unfortunately, a democratic country. It is a place where the laws are imposed by an elite few. Two courageous men died yesterday objecting to those laws, and in the successful attempt to save the life of an unborn child. Throughout history, men have given up their lives for worse causes than that. Those men are heroes by any definition. But I do not think anyone in this room, or for that matter anyone in our country, believes that they deserve to die, heroically or not. The penalty for civil disobedience is not supposed to be death. Even in the darkest days of the 1960s, when black Americans were working to secure their civil rights, the police in the southern states did not commit wholesale murder. And those local cops and members of the Ku Klux Klan who did step over that line were arrested and convicted by the FBI and the Justice Department. In short, there are fundamental differences between the People's Republic of China and America, and of the two systems, I much prefer ours. Ryan escaped the press room 10 minutes later to find Arnie standing at the top of the ramp.
Very good, Jack.
Oh? The president had learned to fear that tone of voice. Yeah, you just compared the People's Republic of China to Nazi Germany and the Ku Klux Klan. Arnie, why is it that the media feel such great solicitude for communist countries? They don't, and the hell they don't. I just compared the PRC to Nazi Germany, and they damn near wet their pants. Well, guess what? Mao murdered more people than Hitler did. That's public knowledge. I remember when CIA released the study that documented it. But they ignore it. Is some Chinese citizen killed by Mao less dead than some poor Polish bastard killed by Hitler? Jack, they have their sensibilities, Van Damme told his president. Yeah, well, just once in a while, I wish they'd display something I can recognize as a principle. With that, Ryan strode back to his office, practically trailing smoke from his ears.
Temper, Jack, temper, Arnie said to no one in particular.
The president still had to learn the first principle of political life, the ability to treat a son of a bitch like your best friend, because the needs of your nation depended on it. The world would be a better place if it were as simple as Ryan wished, the chief of staff thought. But it wasn't, and it showed no prospect of becoming so. A few blocks away at Foggy Bottom, Scott Adler had finished cringing and was making notes on how to mend the fences that his president had just kicked over. He'd have to sit down with Jack and go over a few things, like the principles he held so dear.
What did you think of that, Jerry?
Hosea, I think we have a real president here.
What does your son think of him?
Jerry, they've been friends for 20 years, back to when they both taught at the Naval Academy. I've met the man. He's a Catholic, but I think we can overlook that.
We have to. Patterson almost laughed.
So was one of the guys who got shot yesterday, remember?
Italian, too, probably drank a lot of wine.
Well, Skip was known to have the occasional drink, Patterson told his black colleague.
I didn't know, Reverend Jackson replied, disturbed at the thought.
Hosea, it is an imperfect world we live in.
Just so he wasn't a dancer.
That was almost a joke, but not quite.
Skip?
No, I've never known him to dance, Reverend Patterson assured his friend.
By the way, I have an idea.
What's that, Jerry?
How about this Sunday? You preach at my church and I preach at yours. I'm sure we're both going to speak on the life and martyrdom of a Chinese man.
And what passage will you base your sermon on? Hosea asked, surprised and interested by the suggestion.
Acts, Patterson replied at once.
Reverend Jackson considered that. It wasn't hard to guess the exact passage. Jerry was a fine biblical scholar.
I admire your choice, sir.
Thank you, Pastor Jackson.
What do you think of my other suggestion?
Reverend Jackson hesitated only a few seconds.
Reverend Patterson, I would be honored to preach at your church, and I gladly extend to you the invitation to preach at my own.
40 years earlier, when Jerry Patterson had been playing baseball in the church-sponsored Little League, Hosea Jackson had been a young Baptist preacher, and the mere idea of preaching in Patterson's church could have incited a lynching. But, by the good Lord, they were men of God, and they were mourning the death, the martyrdom, of another man of God of yet another color. Before God, all men were equal, and that was the whole point of the faith they shared. Both men were thinking quickly of how they might have to alter their styles, because though both were Baptists, and though both preached the gospel of Jesus Christ to Baptist congregations, their communities were a little bit different and required slightly different approaches. But it was an accommodation both men could easily make.
Thank you, Hosea. You know, sometimes we have to acknowledge that our faith is bigger than we are.
For his part, Reverend Jackson was impressed.
He never doubted the sincerity of his white colleague, and they'd chatted often on matters of religion and scripture.
Hosea would even admit, quietly, to himself, that Patterson was his superior as a scholar of the Holy Word, due to his somewhat lengthier formal education. But of the two, Hosea Jackson was marginally the better speaker, and so their relative talents played well off each other.
How about we get together for lunch and work out the details? Jackson asked.
Today? I'm free.
Sure. Where?
The country club?
You're not a golfer, are you? Patterson asked hopefully.
He felt like a round, and his afternoon was free today for a change.
Never touched a golf club in my life, Jerry.
Hosea had a good laugh at that.
Robert is. Learned at Annapolis and been playing ever since. Says he kicks the president's backside every time they go out.
He'd never been to the Willow Glen Country Club either, and wondered if the club had any black members. Probably not. Mississippi hadn't changed quite that much yet, though Tiger Woods had played at a PGA tournament there, and so that color line had been breached at least.
Well, he'd probably whip me, too. Next time he comes down, maybe we can play around.
Patterson's membership at Willow Glen was complimentary, another advantage to being pastor of a well-to-do congregation. And the truth of the matter was that, white or not, Jerry Patterson was not the least bit bigoted, Reverend Jackson knew.
He preached the gospel with a pure heart. Hosea was old enough to remember when that had not been so, but that too had changed once and for all. Praise God. For Admiral Mancuso, the issues were the same and a little different. An early riser, he'd caught CNN the same as everyone else. So had Brigadier General Mike Lahr. "Okay, Mike, what the hell is this all about?" Sinkpack asked when his J-2 arrived for his morning intel brief. "Admiral, it looks like a monumental clusterfuck. Those clergy stuck their noses in a tight crack and paid the price for it. More to the point, NCA is seriously pissed." NCA was the code acronym for National Command Authority, President Jack Ryan. "What do I need to know about this?" "Well, things are likely to heat up between America and China, for starters. The trade delegation we have in Beijing is probably going to catch some heat. If they catch too much, well..." His voice trailed off. "Give me worst case," Sinkpack ordered. "Worst case, the PRC gets its collective backup and we recall the trade delegation and the ambassador, and things get real chilly for a while." "Then what?" "Then, well, that's more of a political question. But it wouldn't hurt for us to take it a little seriously, sir," Lahr told his boss, who took just about everything seriously. Mancuso looked at his wall map of the Pacific. Enterprise was back at sea doing exercises between Marcus Island and the Marianas. John Stennis was alongside in Pearl Harbor. Harry Truman was en route to Pearl Harbor after taking the long way around Cape Horn. Modern aircraft carriers are far too beamy for the Panama Canal. Lincoln was finishing up a bobtail refit in San Diego and about to go back to sea. Kitty Hawk and Independence, his two old, oil-fired carriers, were both in the Indian Ocean. At that, he was lucky. First and Seventh Fleets had six carriers fully operational for the first time in years. So, if he needed to project power, he had the assets to give people something to think about. He also had a lot of Air Force aircraft at his disposal. The 3rd Marine Division and the Army's 25th Light, based right there in Hawaii, wouldn't play in this picture. The Navy might bump heads with the Chi-Coms and the Air Force, but he lacked the amphibious assets to invade China, and besides, he wasn't insane enough to think that was a rational course of action under any circumstances. "What do we have in Taiwan right now?" "Mobile Bay, Milius, Chandler, and Fletcher are showing the flag. Frigates Curtis and Reed are doing operations with the ROC Navy. The submarines La Jolla, Helena, and Tennessee are trolling in the Formosa Strait or along the Chinese coast looking at their fleet units." Mancuso nodded. He usually kept some high-end SAM ships close to Taiwan. Milius was a Burke-class destroyer, and Mobile Bay was a cruiser, both of them with the Aegis system aboard to make the ROC feel a little better about the putative missile threat to their island. Mancuso didn't think the Chinese were foolish enough to launch an attack against a city with some U.S. Navy ships tied alongside, and the Aegis ships had a fair chance of stopping anything that flew their way. But you never knew, and if this Beijing incident blew up any more... He lifted the phone for Surf Pack, the 3-star who administratively owned Pacific Fleet's surface ships. "Yeah?" answered Vice Admiral Ed Goldsmith. "Ed, Bart, what material shape are those ships we have in Taipei Harbor in?" "You're calling about the thing on CNN, right?" "Correct," Sinkpack confirmed. "Pretty good. No material deficiencies I know about. They're doing the usual port visit routine, letting people aboard and all. Crews are spending a lot of time on the beach." Mancuso didn't have to ask what they were doing on the beach. He'd been a young sailor once, though never on Taiwan.